Whoa, oh, we are back for the 12th episode of our weekly podcast, Home at Advantage. I'm Sam Herring, accompanied by Jude Swisher on this fine Monday. We're getting ready to talk about some Final X records, but first, Jude, why don't you talk about, because I know we're both there, and that was the first time we've actually ever met in person. So let's just talk a little bit about how we got there.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, did I hear you correctly? Is this our 12th episode?
This is our 12th episode.
That's insane. You know, if 12 weekly episodes, we've been doing this for like 3 months. Just big thank you to all you, our listeners, who are helping us and supporting us. But for the most part, like, we've had our sights set on getting to some events, like, from the beginning. Just, you know, super excited to get to go behind the scenes and talk and meet a whole bunch of people. And just get some really good content for the show. Huge list of people that we need to give thanks to, but thank you to all these people who helped us get connected and situate in this big event. So first of all, the Wrestling Nomad, thank you so much for helping us and showing us the ropes in the interviews, because we would be completely lost without you. Thank you to all of the amazing Flow Squad that we got to meet. Thank you for supporting us. And just, you know, telling us a great job and giving us positive feedback. Thank you so much to Mr. Gary Abbott for helping us get the press passes and giving us permission to do this, even though we're so young. Thank you so much to our parents, Brandon Swisher and Miss Shannon Herring. Thank you guys so much for driving us. You're the best parents we could ever ask for. And last but definitely not least, our great friend, Tony Rotondo. Thank you guys so much for this incredible and incredible experience. Hopefully, we can do some more in the future.
Sam. Hey, alongside Nomad, in the first session, Ryan Holmes was doing the interviews, and he's able to help me out and show me around and everything.
Yeah.
Thanks to him as well.
Talk to Holmes. He's a great guy. Great guy. Sam, what was the coolest thing? Not like necessarily your favorite, but what was the coolest thing of the entire weekend?
Well, it was probably just being on the floor and everybody that wanted to come meet me and everybody that I got to talk to.
Yeah.
I mean, Bill Zadick came up and introduced himself to me and started a conversation with me. And that was pretty awesome. So everybody that came up to me and talked to me for a little while was awesome.
Yeah. Everyone was incredibly nice. Like, everyone was just super nice, super personable. It was really cool. I think the coolest thing for me was, walking with a purpose. I know that sounds kind of silly, but, like, just, I had this little thing that said media on it, and I could go, like, wherever. I could walk around, and it was... I had places to go. I had people to talk to, and I could just walk past people and not even care. It was just that it's something so little, but it was really cool. It was really, really cool.
Yeah. That experience was awesome. But let's jump into the wrestling though.
Dude, I'm excited. It was great. What an awesome event. What awesome.
Yeah, it was so awesome.
It's pretty common knowledge now. We made it public on our last show that we really don't know a whole lot about women's and Greco wrestling. But this event was awesome because we got to see a whole bunch, and it really, for me at least, it was really eye-opening to get to watch all this great wrestling. I was really happy to see, like, just... people really did care about this. It wasn't like people only got fired up for men's freestyle, but like the crowd was electric the entire time. And so that's really great to see.
Yeah. And I was,
but Sam, where do you want to start?
Sadly, Drew wasn't able to make it for the first session, but the crowd was all there for that one. And that was just as good. I really enjoyed that. And I really learned a lot about women's and Greco this weekend. I've got a little bit more knowledge that I can use on this podcast, and hopefully we'll get to discuss some matches on this episode.
Yeah. So where do you want to start, Sam?
Well, right on my mind is Forrest Molinari and Maya Nelson. That one was was really interesting. It went three, and it was really weird because in some of the three matches, the matches that you see go three, it's like they're so close that one guy wins this one really close, and then the next guy wins this one really close. But in this match, Maya Nelson pretty much blew away Molinari in the first one, and then Molinari came back and blew away Nelson in the next two. So that was interesting.
Yeah. And it was funny because we were sitting up in the press box, and I was like, Sam, who's the favorite here? Because I just didn't know. And you're like, oh, it's going to be Molinari. Molinari's going to kill her. And I was like, all right. And then Maya Nelson wins, beats her like, what, 8-2 or something? Real bad. And I was like, I guess not. But then Molinari really turned it around.
Yeah, for sure.
Just crazy. I thought Maya Nelson did a great job in the first match of getting to the legs of Molinari. Like, she was in on, like, 4 or 5 shots, and she finished a whole bunch. So that was pretty cool to see. Like, she had a game plan, and she wouldn't stuck to it. But Molinari really... Sam, do you think it was more of, like, a mental change, some sort of a mental shift that she, like, kind of... It was, like, a wake-up call? What do you think changed from matches 1 to 2 and 3?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and she talked about that, too, in her interview, in which she sounded like Austin DeSantos. She was so animated. But she was talking about how she did not wrestle like Forrest Molinari wrestles, and she had a chip on her shoulder going into 2 and 3. And she just wrestled that Iowa style brands, just I'm gonna push you around the circle until you quit, and then I'm gonna beat you down from there. And she really showed it in that match too.
Yeah.
And after her second match, she got off and she had just won it 10-2, just dominated Nelson. And she was mad. She was so mad. She sprinted off the mat. Like, slaps the coach's hands, but, like, she didn't want to talk to anybody.
She looked very angry.
Yeah. I had to get out of her way. She was running right next to me, and I was...
She was going to run you over.
Yeah, she really was. She didn't care who was in her way. But that was really weird that she, after that second match, she did not have anything to be happy about.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. But funny. I think... that she is going to be a really good world team rep. She lost 1-1 in the bronze medal match last year. And again, she's got a chip on her shoulder. I think she's going to be a really, really good world team rep. One of our best shots at a medalist.
Nice. Another great shot at a medal is Tamara Mensastock.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, she's delightful. She is so fun to be around. She's so goofy. She's really animated. Super nice. One of my favorite interviews of the whole night. But on the mat, she's an animal. She's a Black Panther. The coolest thing that I've ever seen. It was really cool.
And you can refer to me as Little Pastor from now on, Jude.
Little Pastor. And... You know, she's crazy. She's really, really good. She's going to be a world champ this year. I'm calling it.
Oh, yeah. I have to agree with that. I believe that she's our best shot, even though she hasn't really proved it at that level. She's proved at the Yarjun and the Dan Kolov how good she really is. And I'm going to say, I believe that she's a better chance at a world championships than Adeline Gray is. So,
yeah.
That's how confident I am in her. She's been dominating the world level. The Canadian, the Ukrainian are probably her top competition, and she's been able to beat the Ukrainian handily this year. So I'm excited for what's going to happen.
She's 3-time Eureka champ, and you know if she keeps wearing Black Panther wrestling singlets, you know she's going places. Just saying, Wakanda forever.
At the weigh-in, she was wearing that, and they made her do the Wakanda Forever.
Wakanda Forever.
Hey, funny story. At the weigh-ins, they had the stare-down happen.
Yeah.
Whoever watched it live, she and Alexandria Glade, instead of doing the stare-down, they did, like, some secret handshake That was really funny. Like, they did the clap hands all over the place. It was really funny.
That's great. That's another really cool thing about, like, the whole, event. It's, like, when you get to know these wrestlers and they're not just, like, people on a mat or names on a screen, but, like, they're actually people, and you get to know them, and they all have personalities, and they're all different, but they all kind of get along, too. It's very cool. It's very, very cool.
Oh, yeah. What about the Jenna Burkett Becca Leathers? Did you get to watch that match?
I did not get to watch that. I did not get to watch those matches. I know we were in the car for that coming up, and then I haven't had time over the past couple days. But I know that Burkett came out on top. What were your takeaways from that?
Well, it was really interesting because that's been a matchup that's gone both ways. Last year at Final X, Jenna Burkett was able to beat Becca Leathers in the best out of three. And then this year at the U.S. Open, Becca Leathers beat Burkett 7-5. And Burkett came back and won the series dominantly, honestly, with two wins over Leathers. I feel like, and she talked about it in her interview, that she adjusted her technique, because Becca Leathers constantly shoots on the lead leg of Jenna Burkett. That's her go-to, is just boom, shot, boom, shot, boom, shot. And it's really interesting how that goes. And she talked about how she has never felt that before. And it was hard to prepare for that technically because she had never had anybody do that. So she also felt like she was protecting something at the U.S. Open. Like, she was protecting her world team member status.
Yeah.
And so she just had to be free after the U.S. Open. She realized she just had to be free. So she said it was mostly, at the beginning, she said it was mostly a technical change. And then by the end, she was talking about how she was protecting something and how it was a mental change. So it was interesting what she said there.
Yeah.
In that interview.
So yeah, here, let's play that clip real quick.
Okay. You talked about your adjustments from the U.S. Open were just working hard every second and focusing on just where your mind is at every second. Was it just that, or what other adjustments did you make? Was it lifestyle, or was it mostly technique and mental training? What was that?
I have to say, honestly, it was mostly a technical thing. Very rarely did I have someone just blatantly shooting in repeatedly onto my my lead leg. That was the first time I've had that in a long time. Allie didn't take actually a shot. She did all reshots last year. Kelsey, Arian, all those guys didn't shoot on my legs, and so I had to look at why they weren't able to shoot, because my offense was so intense. You know, my pressure, my hand fighting was so intense they couldn't do that. So I think at the Open, I was a little bit like a ghost. You know, I just expected things to happen, and I didn't get after it. That's why my Coach Lewis kept yelling at me, saying, go get it, Jenna. And so I think it was a mental adjustment and just a little bit of a technical adjustment. Nothing too crazy.
And that was very apparent with your go-behinds and re-attacks from her shots.
I'm glad you noticed that. I'm glad it showed that I worked on it.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Yeah, isn't that such a great interview? It's the coolest thing to be standing there in this tiny little hallway holding out a mic to these really animated and really personable athletes. Very, very cool.
For sure.
But let's see. Sam, where do you want to go next? Want to do a little Greco?
Let's do some Greco. The one match that kind of sticks out to me from Greco was Joe Rao, Ben Provisor.
Yeah.
Joe Rao was so funny all weekend long. At the press conference, he was talking about his program, the Chow with Rao. I don't know if you got to hear anything about that, but
Nothing. Oh,
that sounded awesome. He's trying to get a YouTube channel up and get fun so that he can go to restaurants and eat.
Dude, I'd subscribe that.
He did 8 hot dog stands in Chicago in 30 minutes. And
what?
He ate, like, full-size hot dogs. It was... I can't believe it. He's crazy.
That's awesome. Crazy. That's awesome. And, I mean, from the matches themselves, like, everyone saw the video on Flow where Rao just shoves, like, just bulls Provisor over.
Runs
him right out of bounds. And you can just see, like, Joe Rao has a lot of muscle. He's a very strong individual. Very,
he really
very
is.
Powerful. What was your favorite part of the match?
Well, in that series, it was very, very boring with very little action in the first match. And then it was two passivities.
And, two?
Yeah, so one for Rao, one for Provisor, and it was 1-1. And Provisor was going to win for, on criteria like that. And there were, I don't know, 4 seconds to go, and Rao just bulls through him and gets the 1 point to win 3-2. Or no, 2-1. And I thought it was really interesting. So I asked him about how, because I asked him, when he's in need, he can score points, and he showed that in both matches. Mm-hmm. And he talked about it in his interview, how he was feeling that positioning coming, and Provisor was starting to slip up a little bit, and he was waiting for the time. He felt confident the whole time that he could score, even with 4 seconds to go. And then he felt it just switch, and he ran through him, just like a football tackle. And it was great to watch.
Yeah. Joe Rao is now a world team member for 2019. Wow. Pretty cool.
Yeah, it was awesome. And his parterre game was amazing, too.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've kind of known over the past few years, that Greco guys have just superior parterre offense.
Right.
Compared to freestyle guys.
Yeah.
But it was more apparent to me this weekend, just watching guys gut. And Ellis Coleman, right, who is someone I can talk about right now, his gut wrenches are totally match changers. He was losing 2-1 or whatever, and he gets a passivity point, and Jamal Johnson goes down, and he locks up a gut and finishes the match right then.
Yeah, well, so that's the thing. If you get on top, it should be match over. You should get something. Like, that's your shot, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That's where most of the points at Greco are scored, just because, like, it's so hard to defend anything down there because you can't use your legs. You can't use your legs.
Well, the total of the points in his two matches were 12 parterre points. So he scored 2 gut wrenches in the first match and a lifted gut, which was 4 points. And then the second one, he scored a gut and then a lifted gut.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So tough.
Well, another fun fact about him was his college was Northern Michigan, which is the Olympic Training Center for Greco.
Right.
So he had training in college at the Olympic Training Center, which most guys don't have. They either don't go to college, or they go to a college and wrestle folk style. So he's had Greco focus his whole life, which is
That's really interesting. Cool.
And actually, he went to high school in Illinois, and he trained with Kamal Bey.
Wow. Man, that's a great segue. Look at all these awesome segues we have. Kamal Bey, or should I say Pat Smith, the Honda Civic.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to Kazakhstan. Oh, man. They were great matches. I didn't get to see the last one. I was doing an interview. But it was, from what I saw, it was a really, really tight group of three. Sam, do you remember when we were walking back from, we were walking to do an interview with, 1 second, Tamara Mensastock. No, it was Mensastock.
Okay.
We were walking back to do the interview, and Smith was sitting on the floor after he had won match two, and his eyes were just closed, and he was just like whispering to himself, like he was in the zone, and you could tell we weren't about to mess with him. Pat Smith had a mission. It's crazy.
Well, and to be honest, Ferraris don't last very well when you take them to match three.
I've never wrestled a Ferrari.
Pat Smith has one of the greatest paces, the plural form of pace,
paces,
in the whole sport of Greco. all over the world. I watching him at the U.S. Open and watching him at the World Team Trials really lets you know how much of a pace, how a pace can have an effect on a match in Greco. I've never really understood. I've always thought that Greco is Kamal Bey favored when if you throw a guy over and over and over again, it's you're gonna win. But
yeah,
a pace is very big in Greco. And that was apparent with Pat Smith. So
100%.
That series was awesome to watch because it has two totally different styles. A Honda Civic and a Ferrari. Kamal Bey was in the first match dominating Pat Smith. He threw him all over the place and he ended up with a tech. But then going into the second and third matches, Pat Smith's pace wore off on Kamal Bey, and he didn't have that energy to launch him. So I'm excited for Pat Smith to be our world team rep.
Me too. How funny is it that Kamal Bey would actually predict his match and how it would go? He's in the he would say, "Oh, he's the Honda Civic, and he's probably a little more consistent, but I'm a Ferrari."
Yeah.
Well, look at that. He kind of called how it would happen. So, very cool. Well, the women's freestyle. Men's Greco matches were amazing. It was all really, really interesting. I learned a whole bunch. I know you did too, Sam. And coming up, we're going to talk about some crazy men's freestyle matches and then answer some really great questions. All of this after the break.
This episode of Home Mat Advantage is sponsored by WrestlersOrWarrior.com. If you're looking for a visual accompaniment to our podcast, be sure to check out the awesome photos at WrestlersOrWarrior.com. Tony Rotundo is an amazing friend of ours, and his photos are great. Go see for yourself at WrestlersOrWarriors.com. That's WrestlersOrWarriors.com.
And we are back from our break. Back to get into some excellent, excellent men's freestyle matchups. Sam, are you excited?
I'm so excited. These matches from Final X were electric all the way through, and it was great to watch. There's so many storylines in here. Let's jump right in.
Well, first of all, Sam, imagine how crazy it would be if David Taylor and Kyle Dake were wrestling, too, because then our heads might explode. It might have just been just too much good wrestling for us. We might not have been able to handle it.
Maybe. Yeah, that I haven't really thought about that, but if we got David Taylor, Pat Downey, well, we got Pat Downey. But
yeah, we got the
David Taylor, Kyle Dake, and Alex Deringer in that. Oh my gosh, that would have been so awesome.
It would have been mind-blowing.
Hey, what if Final X did every year did like a all-star high school match?
Yeah, but then it'd be like Beat the Streets or Who's Number One. I could see it to be like get more media and whatever to for like our up-and-coming junior and cadet, but do you mean just like an exhibition? Because then that's going to be too much like Beat the Streets, and that's not the point of Final X. The point of Final X is to establish the world team.
Yeah,
the point of Beat the Streets is to not only is it a fundraiser and a charity event, but it's also to inspire people and to spread wrestling around, and so that's why having high school matchups and Beat the Streets is it's better suited than Final X, because Final X its purpose is let's get a world team and have the most people watching the world team members as possible.
Okay, so how about this? We had juniors.
Okay.
That's what I want. I really just want juniors.
A junior Final X?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm not mad at that. I think that'd be cool.
What if we did junior, cadet, U23 all at a separate Final X?
I think that'd be cool. It's good to have some like hype up time to get up. Like they're definitely going to be more people watching or coming to the event, because what the biggest flaw with World Team Trials was that people weren't like, they didn't really, there wasn't enough time to care about what was happening. It was like, oh, this guy won and now let's go. But now, like, the World Team Trials wrestled, and we've had, like, 2 weeks, 3 weeks to really hype up Final X and to get it to be the best event possible.
Yeah.
So.
I agree.
They're doing pretty well.
They're doing great.
Okay. Well, let's get into Nick Gwizdowski, Gable Steveson.
Let's do it.
So, Gwiz, he won in 2 matches. He's our world team member at 125 kilograms. And Gable looked super good. Gable looked awesome.
He really did.
He kept the pace on super high. He got super good reshots. But, you know, both times, he just couldn't hold on enough. He couldn't pull it out. But it's crazy to see, like, this kid just turned 19 years old. He's right there with the very, very best in America. Like, Gable's going to be around for a long time. That's what I'm trying to say.
Oh, Sam, for sure.
Sam, what were your thoughts for the match?
Well, very encouraged. I wasn't sure. I wanted to see a new Nick Gwizdowski. And this is that's because he has been in the lead, and I mean, he's such a good wrestler, but I feel like his savviness, if that's a word,
yes,
has never been on point. So I was very encouraged to see him be able to pull out 2 last second or very close wins this weekend over Gable Steveson, who has proved how clutch he is in so many different instances.
Right.
And then also to see, I mean, he's proven again and again and again his athletic abilities. And when Gable Steveson was able to shuck him by multiple times with his overcollar, but Nick Gwizdowski was able to spin out in good position and be able to reattack. And, I mean, that was evident in the fact that he scored 2 points off of a shrug and 2 points off of a sweep. He was able to get to his offense. So that was very encouraging. And then, again, from Gable Steveson, it was encouraging to see how close he really is to a 2-time world bronze medalist.
Right.
And hopefully Gwiz can put it together this year and step up higher in that podium, reach the finals maybe.
Yeah,
that
maybe.
That would prove so much about Gable Steveson and the future of heavyweight in our country.
Yeah. And all biases aside, it really does make you wonder where Anthony Cassar would have fallen in this group of really tough wrestlers. Because he proved this season that he's right there. But hopefully that'll be next year at 2020.
He'll be our first in 1999.
The Olympic trials are going to be in State College. Guys, come up to State College. Come, let's hang out at the Olympic trials. It'll be a ball. It'll be a ball.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have any more thoughts on Gwiz, Gable?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, okay.
Now, I was just discussing match one, pretty much.
Yeah.
But,
one reshot, this is real quick for match one, that one reshot Gable had, so fast, so strong.
It was
really cool. Really cool looking. And, I don't know. It's kind of what everyone thought was going to happen, is Gable's going to take advantage of those reshots.
For sure. And, Gable's snatch single, was so, so fast and so heavy. Mm-hmm. And he was able to just walk Gwiz out in the second match. But in the first match, Gwiz shot in on a single leg, and Gable's able to pop his lock, and he started circling to the opposite side, caught the hamstring, and instead of running all the way through it, like most guys do on a high crotch slash double, he kind of dropped his position, dropped his shoulders so that they were square, and he ran straight forward, and was able to put Gwiz right on his bottom,
which is interesting. Takedown. Because in a situation like that, especially against a big guy like Gwizdowski, you want to get angles because that's the key to attack or to scoring. You want a good angle.
Well, that's what I think I'm arguing, is right, fighting his hips when you do that. And what Gable's able to do is shift his shoulders so that his opposite, like when, if you shoot a righty high crotch or a righty double leg, your right shoulder is going to be in the guy's chest. And when you run through it, you're going to kind of open that right shoulder up and it's going to be your chest. But what Gable did is he pushed that right shoulder even farther so that Gwiz started to fall down a little bit and lose balance. And then he just ran straight through him.
Yeah.
That was really interesting. I've never seen a high crotch finish like that from anybody other than Gable.
It might be just a heavyweight thing, Sam.
Yeah, it might be.
Heavyweight technique is different. That's for sure.
Well, even then, I don't see it at heavyweight. I think that's Gable is innovating his techniques to fit his style, which is awesome to see.
It's great to see. All right. What else do you think?
Well, about that match, I'd have to say, I think that we're going to see a better Gwizdowski this year. And I believe that depending on his draw, if he has one of those top guys on his side, I think he can knock him off.
Wow.
And make it to the finals.
Yeah.
So I really believe that we're seeing a Gwiz that's new and innovative, and he's ready to go for the world championships. Not to mention a summer full of training with Gable.
Sure, you can learn some tricks from that.
Yeah, Gable's going to be able to push him. Normally, I mean, last year he had Kuhn to train with, but to be honest, I don't think there's anybody at the world level who wrestles like Kuhn. So,
nobody.
I'm really happy to see that match. I was encouraged by both wrestlers and the future of our country. And yeah, I'm excited to see what goes down in Kazakhstan.
Me too. Okay. So Sam, we're at a crossroads. Do we want to talk about Boeth Nickel and Jaden Cox or Zane Rutherford and Yanni Diakomopoulos? I'm leaning we go Bo Jaden and then we can finish on Yanni Zane.
I'm going to have to agree just because of all the storylines on Zane Yanni.
The drama. Okay. Yeah. Well, let's go to Bo Jaden. I'll start. I think, first of all, the matchup had a lot more potential to be a crazy match. Like, Bo is such a loose cannon that I really think that Jaden was all he wanted to do was just like keep the lid on him. Don't give him a chance. So for the most part, Bo couldn't really get any offense going. And the one time he did get to the legs in the first match, Jaden did that, the hip walking forward thing and just like basically ran him over and ended up getting to the score.
Yeah. But don't say that it was just Jaden, because Bo Nickel did not really push forward a lot. Jaden Cox was moving forward a lot, moving his feet, circling, and like level changing a whole lot. But Bo was kind of just standing up to that and not really reacting. He didn't do much until he gets to his offense. Very rarely. Yeah.
Well, that's how Bo does. He kind of just chills out, and then when it's go time, it's go time.
Yeah, but the only points that Bo Nickel scored in the first match, I mean, the whole series, the only points that he scored in the whole series was a shot clock point and a point for lost challenge.
That was the weirdest thing ever. That whole gut wrench out of bounds, and then they challenged it and got Bo Nickel a point. It was like, what?
Yeah,
I didn't understand. So we were a little lost.
Absolutely a 2-point gut.
I thought it was too.
It's crazy. And I think KJ should have been more clear about his challenge. I don't think that they got the point of what he was actually challenging.
Yeah. But I think the next step for Bo is being able to go the entire match and not being able to like not chill out, because that as soon as you start putting pressure on someone the entire match, like that's a deal breaker right there. If Bo can keep pressure on Jaden Cox the entire match, and I think that's going to be his best shot, because obviously he's right there. But there's just another little, I don't know, level of wrestling that he's got to achieve. He's got to ascend.
So. Yeah. Personally, I don't see Bo Nickel ever reaching Jaden Cox. I just think Jaden Cox is too good in every single position.
Are you saying that Bo's ceiling isn't high enough? There's just no way he can possibly do it? Or it's just like he won't do it before Jaden retires? Or what are you saying?
I'm saying that because of Jaden's abilities and because of Jaden's skills in every position, I mean, I don't see him getting beat for a very long time. I mean, maybe when he's similar to
Burroughs,
Jake Herbert kind of thing, where he comes back and he's old. like when you're old and you're not at that same competitive level, but you still want to be competing.
Yeah, no, I know what that's
like. I think that's the next time that we see Jaden Cox lose. Yeah. With his training situation and his coaches and his partners, he's in the perfect spot, and he's just going to be getting better.
I agree. Well, what would you say Bo's next step is here? Because if
for improving?
Yeah, for improving.
Man, that's really tough. I would have to say using his lefty lead. I know that's something that Jaden Cox had trouble with, and he talked about in his interview, is he felt that really weird style, and it was hard to feel him out. So I think if Bo Nickel uses that a lot more,
right,
and he comes in to the left side and doesn't let Jaden do anything conventional, and to the right side, I think he's going to confuse Jaden a little bit, and he's probably going to be able to get to his offense. But another big thing is, real quick,
okay,
I have no idea why Bo Nickel continues to shoot on Jaden's left leg. Because Jaden's sitting the corner and his hips from that side, and is also that leg is back.
Right.
So Jaden's abilities is he's going to be stuffed every time you shoot on Jaden's left leg.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So would you say Bo lost that match? You have to pick one. You can't say it's a combination of both.
Okay.
Because do you think it was that Jaden was just too good? That Jaden was just, everything about him was just too good and that Bo couldn't win? Or do you think it was something Bo did? Does that make sense? Do you think it was Jaden or Bo? Who do you think it was?
Definitely Jaden. Definitely Jaden. I think that Bo is at a very high level right now. And I think if you send him to the World Championships, he medals for sure.
Right.
But that's how good I feel that Jaden Cox is. I feel like you send him to the World Championships at 86 kilos, at 97 kilos, and he's going to medal. And medal
think
high.
You think he'll beat Sagulayev?
I'd have to see him at the weight, but I think he's at the top of that weight class. If he doesn't, I think he's right behind Sagulayev at second place.
I think he's right there. I think he looks great. So, Bo Nickel has some work to do. Jaden Cox, I'm calling it right here. He's going to take gold. He's taking gold.
Yeah, and again, 92 kilos is a very weak weight class.
Right.
Internationally, Nurifov is probably the toughest competition for him from Russia. And he's tough. He beat Karugliev. So, very, very tough guy. But at the same time, I feel like Jaden's style matches the Russian's abilities very well.
Right. Okay. Sam, I think it's time.
For Yanni Zane.
It's Yanni Zane time, Sam. Oh, my gosh. Wow. All right. You can start us off. Sam. Zane Rutherford is our 2019 65-kilogram world team member.
Hold your horses there, June. He's not that yet.
Sam.
Wait. I don't. we can't say that's confirmed yet because Yanni's camp is challenging.
How are they going to do it? What is the process? How does that even happen?
Well, Rich Bender talked about it's not USA Wrestling. They have to go to the Olympic Committee and argue. But from what it sounds like from Rob Cole is they figured it out and they're submitting their challenge and their protest. I have to say, Jude, and I want to hear your opinion on this. If they have the ability to protest and it's actually looked at the way that Cornell coaching staff is hoping for it to be looked at, do they win the challenge and is there a third match? Do you think it's a valid
challenge? What I know is that that match was basically a, it was a referee's nightmare, pretty much.
Like, oh, for sure.
You know, highest level of wrestling, like the two best guys in the entire world to make a world team. And they're in the craziest scramble ever where there's so much ambiguity around the rules and nobody knows what's going on. Like that Sammy Julian is the best referee in the entire world. And even he struggled with that. Like, nobody knows what's happening.
Well, In my opinion, he didn't struggle. And he had it perfectly right on the mat.
But he wasn't. They looked back and then that messed it up?
Yeah. Yeah. I think what he had at first was the correct call. And I didn't believe that. I thought it was actually Zane's points at first. But
like when
Kale threw the brick 50 seconds later and like, hey, wait. After the match.
So what is the rule about that? Are you allowed to throw the brick after the match?
Not at all. I mean, I have it right here and I'll read it for you. It's no challenge can be requested after the end of regular time of a period, which had already happened, except when the points are added to the scoreboard after the referee's whistle or in case action occurred just before the time is over. The coach has 5 seconds.
I mean, action.
The coach has 5 seconds from the time the question score is posted on the official scoreboard to request the challenge.
All right, then. So maybe that was an illegal challenge. But for the most part, I don't know. It's just, from where I was sitting, or where I was standing, it really didn't look like, I don't know. It didn't, you couldn't even tell. You can't even tell.
Willie posted a high definition and slow motion video on that scramble.
Right. I haven't seen it yet, but I will.
I went back and watched that, and it really looked like Yanni's chest wrap. It did not look like Zane kind of did like a forward roll and jumped over. It really looked Yanni initiated that chest wrap.
So I know it's really hard to understand from like an audio podcast for the listeners, but if you have a guy's leg across the back of your neck and you're holding it with your hand, your left hand, you got the heel, and you come up just like Zane did, you can jump backwards. You can jump across. But if you're Yanni, you can't take your leg and pull a guy across to you. You can't do that. You're not strong enough. So it was probably a combination of Yanni's one-footed chest wrap. Like, that's really hard. I think it was, my personal opinion is that it was Zane's initiation. It should be Zane's points. Because he just, you know, as a wrestler, you can get in that position and you know that you can jump from there, but you can't pull a guy with your leg.
Right.
I don't know. It's hard. I know you get it, but I'm sorry to our listeners. You might not understand what's going on. Hey, maybe we'll do a technique video on this sometime.
Maybe.
Who knows?
I still feel like, it was Yanni's initiation just because of how Yanni jumped, or Zane had the leg straight on and he went straight backwards. It doesn't seem like that would be a movement that you would try when you're in that crackdown position. But anyway, it doesn't really matter to me because of the time that Kale threw the brick.
That's that was the other thing. So here's a couple things that could happen. First of all, this whole like take away match two and give it to Yanni, it's starting to sound a little bit like Carrie Collat. Just a little bit. You know, and that was a travesty. That was one of the worst things ever to happen in our sport. But also, like, I don't know if what they would do is that they would just wipe away the challenge. Is that what would happen? They would say, like, all right, Kale, your challenge was thrown too late, and so we can't apply it to the rules, and so Yanni wins.
It was the third match, yeah. I mean, that was an illegal challenge. And honestly, I mean, the best wrestling coach in the world should have known that, and I think he did know it.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe not. Who knows? Who knows what goes on in Kale Sanderson's head?
Yeah.
If
you did, you'd be rich.
But stay posted. Stay on Twitter. I'm sure we're going to find out what happens. Flow Wrestling will continue talking about this. And we'll figure it out. But here's one thing that I think's for certain. That if we get the Zane that we saw at Final X in Kazakhstan, then he's going to medal. I 100% believe that. But the Zane at the U.S. Open, no medal. No medal. Zane said some huge adjustments from the Open until Final X. Especially against Yanni, he just did these great low shots. He was very explosive. But most of all, he was not afraid to scramble. You know, he knew what he was doing.
Oh, I kind of disagree, to be honest. I think that he was trying to stay out of a scramble best he could. I think that the low-level shots that he was taking when he adjusted from up the body to lower the body kind of eliminated the factor of Yanni's knees and the flexibility of his knees.
The flexibleness.
of his knees. He just eliminated that factor by shooting down low. And I think that was him trying to avoid the scramble.
Well, of course, avoid the scramble against Yanni Diakamalis. If you try to beat him in a scrambling competition, you're going to lose. Like, I don't know. You're not going to be able to do it. So you have, obviously, stay at the scramble as much as possible. But don't be like, don't freeze up in the scramble. When he got in the scrambling position, he wasn't like, oh, shoot, what do I do? Like, he had a plan. He knew what he was going to do. You know, at Penn State, they do hours and hours of play wrestling from these positions. And he had something planned. He kind of knew what was going to happen.
Absolutely.
I'm not saying that he was I guess what I'm trying to say is, sure, he avoided the scramble because that's how you win a wrestling match. If you can finish cleanly and you can keep out of hairy situations, then you're going to win. But Zane wasn't afraid to be in those positions. If they he knew what was happening.
That makes sense. And I agree with that. He didn't stop moving. He didn't freak out. And he continued to go.
Right. Well, I asked him in the interview, I asked him a question about transition from the U.S. Open into
his adjustments.
His adjustments. Thank you. I couldn't think of the word.
Yeah.
From the Open until Final X. So here's that clip.
Do you think the changes you made from the U.S. Open until now were more technical or mental?
More mental. I think if the me that showed up at the U.S. Open had showed up at the World Team Trials, I don't think I'd be here right now. So just a little mental things. I'm grateful to be here, obviously. But, yeah, there's technique, obviously. You're always working on technique, but more mental.
All right, so what you can hear there is actually very interesting. Anyone could watch the match and say, oh, he really went to the practice room and he had a technical shift and he changed how Zane wrestled.
Right.
But he claims that it was mostly mental. So that's pretty interesting. What do you think about that, Sam?
Well, I definitely understand where he's coming from, and I feel like when a high-level athlete loses a match, that he feels like he was right in there to win it, it's always going to be mental. And he's going to make a bunch of technical adjustments so that he can go win, but the ability to execute those technical changes come from the mental changes, and I think that's what Zayn thinks about the most, and I think he thinks about him executing with confidence and him going into the match and being able to execute those technical changes and those technical transitions changes with confidence, and he does it thinking and knowing that he can finish it, and he's done training, mental training, thinking about that. So I think all high-level wrestlers, after they lose a match like that, are going to claim it's going to be mental.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you ever lose a match in the last 30 seconds, if you ever lose a match in overtime, you know that you can beat that guy. You know that, hey, if I did something a little different, I could have won. But, you know, we've all been there. I know I have.
So, but, dude.
Yes, Sam.
If this goes into a third match, let's say Fargo, because I feel like that's the most realistic.
Oh, you're just asking me to pick it.
Yeah. Yeah.
How can we pick a match like this? How can we do it? It's literally the most one of the most contested wrestling matches we've seen in, you know, forever.
Yeah. You know,
both of them are so good, and the level of wrestling is so high that when they go all out, it's like, it's mind blowing. Sam, I can't. I gotta pick Zayn again, you know. Just being able to make those technical adjustments was huge. And this is what we were hypothesizing. We're like, if anyone can do it, can the Penn State magicians, can they scrape a win out of Zayn?
Right.
Not only one, they scraped out two. Say what you want, but Zayn's hand got raised twice. Zayn is our rep, right? Currently, he's our rep. So, if this goes three, it would be the coolest thing in the world. I just kind of want to see these guys wrestle for like half an hour straight.
Well, guess what? Whoever wins this match, if it goes to three, and if it doesn't, Zayn is going to have Yanni as a training partner all summer long for every camp, and Yanni's going to be dedicated. Yanni's job is going to be to get Zayn to win a world medal in Kazakhstan this year.
Oh, my gosh.
So how awesome is that to have Yanni Diakomihalis and then probably Jordan Oliver and then probably Frank Molinaro and Jaden Ironman and everybody at your weight committed to making you a world champion. And then below you, you have Joe Colon and A'shaun Garrett and Tyler Graff. And then above you, you have James Green.
And you have Jason Nolf training with you in your room. And in your corner, you have the Casey Cunningham, Cody Sanderson, and Kale Sanderson. Like,
yeah. He's set up. He's set up very well.
I'm confident in Zayn. I think that if he wrestles how we saw him at Final X, I think we're going to bring home some hardware.
I do too. I really do. But I'm going to have to say, and I've talked about why I believe Yanni beats Zayn. And if it goes to a third match, and shout out to Justin Winnie, he asked me this on Twitter and it got me thinking about it and why I'm going to pick Yanni. I'm still sticking with Yanni regardless of the results of those matches. And really, there's no change. It really means Zayn won one, Yanni won one. If this goes to a third match. So,
right.
They're even right now. And I'm still going to say Yanni. And all this because I don't believe that there are many more adjustments for Zayn to make. I think he's kind of found the perfect spot with that low-level attack.
Right.
But
maybe if he gets more turns on top.
That's true. But I just don't see that happening. I feel like Yanni, if he's able to have more of a sugarfoot stance and separate his two legs, that opens up his scrambling abilities to
way more.
So many more levels. And if he's able to circle his feet, I feel like he stands still way too much in hand fights without his feet involved.
Yeah.
I feel like there are so many adjustments for Yanni to make and very little. To be honest, I think that Zayn has wrestled perfect matches at Final X. I mean, as close as perfect as you can get, obviously.
Right.
I just feel like Yanni has a much higher ceiling and a much higher ability to win this match. And I'm still sticking by that after what happened this last weekend.
All right. Okay, Sam. Well, here's, I think, the last thing to talk about. Sam, how did your Final X picks go? How did they go?
Oh, they didn't go great. I went 1-for-3. I mean, right now, if Yanni gets his third match and wins, then I guess I go 2-for-3.
Okay, well, that's but how it always is.
Right now, it's 1-for-3, so.
1-for-3. Well, I went 2-for-3, I guess.
All right, brother, big dog.
I don't know. Okay. So I don't want to say who's the better at predicting matches, but.
You were definitely better than last weekend.
Just this weekend. Maybe I just got lucky. Okay.
Penn State homer.
Penn State homer for the win. Do you want to hop into some questions here, Sam?
Well, you guys skip Bo Nickel, Jaden Cox?
We already talked about Bo and Jaden.
Never mind. let's jump into that question about the Zayn Yanni match, because we're on that topic.
Okay, I'll read it.
Okay.
It says, could we see a possible re-wrestle of Yanni versus Zayn series based on Zayn's obviously illegal camo singlet? Yanni can't wrestle what he can't see. Hashtag dogman season. Well, obviously, that's 100% true. Like, he was wearing this camo singlet. Yanni couldn't see him at all. Zayn just blended right in. Blended into the mat.
I mean, that's totally true. And Scrap Life is genius for doing that. And I can see now why Zayn wanted to sign with Scrap Life.
Right.
And also, that shows the ability of Yanni Diakamahalis. I think they're going to ban Scrap Life, and I think they're going to ban Yanni from wearing that singlet again.
Or Zayn from wearing Zayn's, the singlet.
Yeah, and Yanni's going to get a third match, and he's going to actually see him, and he's going to tech fall him.
Oh, just because he's seeing? So you say Yanni,
sees him.
Yanni was wrestling on sense of smell.
Oh, yeah.
There.
Yeah.
He's a wrestling wizard. But funny question, Chris Christian.
That wasn't Chris Christian.
Sorry, my bad. It was...
It's Liam Volk Close at the Grind 73.
My bad. Sorry, Chris. And sorry, Liam.
Christian asked a funny one, too.
Hey, do you wanna bring him in here?
Oh, yeah. Give me a second. You talk. You can talk for a little while.
So, all right.
I'll be right back.
Okay. So our next question is from Wrestler Never Dies as a Cat Fan, who, listen, Cat Fan, first of all, I'm very sorry that I didn't get to see you at Final X Wreckers, but hopefully I'll get to see you again sometime soon. I know you go to Penn State, and I know you guys are off or whatever right now, but listen, man, I want to meet you in person. I want to meet you in person. And if you don't look exactly like Seabass, then I'm going to be disappointed. So, he asks, what was your favorite series, favorite interview, and how was the experience? Well, my favorite series was clearly Yanni Zayn. It was the atmosphere, for all those who didn't go, like, you're sitting in the gym, and, like, they walk up, and just everyone's losing their minds over this match. It's, the mood was electric, and it was crazy. Everyone was jumping all over the place. My favorite interview was Jaden Cox's or Tomorrow Mensah Stock. But both of those guys, so fun. They were all over the place, really animated. Jaden gave one of the best interviews I've ever seen. He was outspoken, and he talked so much. Sam, are you there?
Hey, man. I'm here.
Oh, you're back?
I'm listening.
I was just talking about Jaden. And his interview, and how he smacked your microphone when you were recording.
Oh, yeah, that was so funny. He was jumping all over the place, and I was trying to ask him a question. And I was waiting for it, and I had the microphone held up pretty close to him, and he just smacked it right out of my hand. It was really funny.
It was great. And then the last thing he says, how was the experience? It was the coolest thing I've ever done in my entire life.
It really was.
It was awesome. And I would do it 1,000 more times. Tony had said to us before we went, he's like, once you get to one event, you just want to keep going. You want to go back. You want to go back. You want to go back. Because there's nothing like being on the floor.
Oh, yeah.
And I was, he's 100% correct.
Oh, yeah.
So, very cool.
Hey, I got a guest with us here for a special question from Chris Christian.
Chris Christian asked a special question. Let me read it. All right. It says, using the at Kyle Bradby, Kyle Bradkey, KBDR, which is the Kyle Bradkey death rating, how upset was Eli, that's Eli Herring, after seeing a picture of at Wrestling Nomad Chicken Wing that Christian Piles had posted? So, we are here joined special guest Eli Herring, Sam's brother, chicken wing lover. Eli, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I gotta say, I'm pretty upset, but I can give him one pass, because I remember one time a long time ago at a place called B&S Barbecue, Big and Spicy, in Horn Lake, Mississippi. I had ordered about 10 wings, and they were full wings. They weren't just they weren't two pieces.
Yeah, they weren't baby wings. They were.
Yeah, they were the full ones.
All right. And
I had a pile of bones in my plate, and I was about to throw it away. And then my dad walked up and said, wait, wait, wait. And he saw a little orange wing in the bottom. So, yeah, I can give him one pass, but if he does it again, man, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Oh, no. Uh-oh. It's going to be an 11. 11 on the KBDR.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. At the hotel we were in for Final X, the room next to the elevator was not... They had chicken wings, and it was bad.
Oh, bad chicken wings.
No, so... The chicken wings were probably good. I didn't have any because I'm trying to eat healthy.
But, nice.
They left so much meat on it.
Oh, what? And, that's just wasteful.
Yeah, it was bad. That's terrible.
That's not good.
Hey, okay. Eli, thanks so much for coming on, bud. That Eli, was awesome.
Thank you so much.
If you need any more chicken wing critiques?
A chicken wing connoisseur.
I'll be right here.
All right.
And,
you heard it here first, guys.
Joe Rogan? No, not Rogan. Hold on.
I don't know.
Joe Rao. Oh, yeah. Joe Rao. He's got to get some chicken wings on his food.
All right. Joe, listen, man. You and Eli should have a competition.
Oh, Joe's in trouble in that situation.
We got to set it up.
Yeah.
Joe Rao versus Eli Herring. Chicken wing chow down.
A lot of people don't know this, but where I set my record was at a senior night lacrosse game, and they had trays full of chicken wings, and one was buffalo and the other didn't have any sauce on it.
Uh-huh.
And so when I had about emptied the buffalo tray at 26, somebody told me that I have to leave some wings for the lacrosse team. I said okay, and I actually got to 30 on the wings with non-sauce.
Oh my gosh. That's crazy.
Salt and pepper wings. I gotta say, they weren't that good, but it's chicken wings, so.
You know, they're always gonna be good. Okay.
Alright, thanks for having me on.
Alright, see you, Eli.
Bye.
Alright. Sam, I think that about does it for this episode of episode 12 of Home Ad Advantage Wrestling Podcast. Jeez, we did it. We went to our first event. We finally met each other in person. Got to meet Tony Rotundo. Thank you so much, Sam. Thank you so much, Tony. Big shout out to WrestlersAreWarriors.com for sponsoring us, and it was great. Sam, anything to say?
Hey, be on the lookout for Final X Lincoln preview this week, and share the podcast. Thanks again for listening, guys. I'm out.
Guys, thank you so much, and we will see you next time.